Love is yours.
Okay, I think we're ready, folks. We're missing one counselor yet, or Marilyn. Have you, Dick was here earlier. He didn't say anything if he couldn't make it.
I haven't heard.
Okay, all right. I'll call the meeting to order. And Allison, could we get a roll call, please?
Coburn?
Here.
Kupczynski?
Here.
Kellum?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Sykes? Olson? Canova?
Here. Okay, first on the agenda is business from the public. Is there anyone here that would like to bring an item forward to us this afternoon? All right, welcome, Jim. Okay. So then next would be purchase and sales agreements for the former Brandis property. Ed?
Yes, thank you very much. I'll keep it brief and then entertain questions. We're back essentially after, as you directed, negotiating purchase and sale agreements for parcels 1 and 2 of the old Brandis property. I never know quite what to call it, so I called it the old former Brandis property. There are three parcels out there, as the map that's attached to your memo indicates. Parcels 1 and 2 drew interest from a partnership of Bredner and Tokarski.
Did I say that right?
No.
Tokarski.
Never, I will never get this right. Sorry, guys. It's right here in front of me, and I still can't pronounce it. Those two people.
Hey, Russian.
Those two people. It's real simple.
Yeah, thank you for totally humiliating. So anyway, after some negotiation, we with the two parties decided to split the agreement into two purchase and sale agreements. It seemed like a better approach, and we did it at their request. Parcel 1 with Bredner, the PSA, is for the northernmost piece of property, as indicated on your map, and parcel 2 is the one that's closest to the Knox Butte intersection with Timber Ridge Road or Street. Their prices are the same as they were in the original offer, which are the same as the appraised value, so nothing has changed there. I'm trying to think if there's anything just really important to share other than what's in the memo. Both PSAs require a $50,000 escrow payment with the balance due upon closing for both parcels. The difference is that parcel number 1 will close very quickly without any other due diligence or conditions being met. As soon as we have a formal agreement after the public hearing authorizing the sale of that property, we can close, I think, January 31st is the date now. So very quickly thereafter. Parcel 2 takes a while longer. That's the parcel that would most likely involve the other party. There's a more of a due diligence period on this one that's been built into the purchase and sale agreement, primarily because of wetland permitting issues. It's just going to take a while, and we're just not sure how long. It could even extend past that. But if we get to that point and we need to extend for whatever reason, of course it would come back. With that, I think ready for questions.
On your the cash deposit $40,000 note, it indicates that the cash deposit would be non-refundable, but would the note be refundable if they weren't able to participate by that point in time? Sean does not.
Let Sean do that. Yeah.
The intent was that the $40,000 would be refundable if they were not able to obtain their permits. But there's a drop. That's why that date in May is kind of like a drop dead day where that money goes hard at that point. So.
The trapezoidal piece that in dots.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That used to be part of 1 and is now part of 2, is or vice versa?
And it's still part of 1, isn't it?
Yeah.
This piece right here. We didn't make that change.
No, well, that change will be made. It's part of the plats that the county signed in the next couple of weeks.
And that becomes part of 2?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okie dokie.
Okay, questions? Okay. So, Ed, what you're needing is just to schedule this for a public hearing if the council wants to proceed forward.
Essentially, we need to execute the PSAs and then go ahead and schedule the hearing for sale. And we would do that December the 6th, I think, is what our memo said.
Okay.
So we'll put that on the agenda for Wednesday and authorize that, or normally we don't try and authorize things at work sessions too much.
Right.
It's not a formal approval.
It's really just.
That's why we're here.
It's a direction.
It's a nod.
Just looking for any feedback you have.
Yeah, if you had concerns, we would take them into account.
Could be scheduled for a public hearing.
Right.
Okay. Council okay with that?
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Let's see, this is one's verbal report, Senate Bill 719. Refresh our memory on Senate 19.
Senate Bill 719 gives court the authority to put in play what's called an extreme risk protection order, and that protection order can be petitioned by law enforcement, family members, or household members for people that they feel are a danger to themselves or others under certain circumstances. So it's kind of a twofold thing, and part of what we're still waiting on is how Lynn County courts and Bend County courts are going to interpret the procedure and what their thresholds are going to be. But just reading what the law is, if law enforcement or family members or household members have a concern that they can document and justify and file a petition, a judge at either Lynn Circuit Court or Benton County Circuit Court would hear that within 24 hours. And in much the same way as a restraining order, the judge would make an initial ruling. And if they said, yes, we feel there's enough grounds to issue an extreme risk protection order, law enforcement or the sheriff's office would serve that person with the notice, and then they would have 24 hours to relinquish their firearms either to law enforcement, friend or family members that are able to lawfully keep weapons, or to a firearms dealer. And if the person who has a order served against them has the ability to request a hearing in the same venue, in the same vein as a restraining order violation, to contest that, the judge then would make a ruling, yes, it either stands or I'll rescind it. So as the bill's written, the orders are in effect for 1 year and can be requested by the petitioners to be extended beyond that. One of the things that makes this unique is if it's brought by a family member or a household member, the Albany Police Department won't be part of that. They can bring a petition to the court on their own. And so my discussions with Lynn County has been, in those circumstances, it looks like if a judge grants one of these protection orders based on somebody other than law enforcement, it would be the county's responsibility to make service in much the same way as restraining orders and things of that nature. Now, what's up in the air is if a law enforcement officer from the Albany Police Department makes that petition, are we going to be required to make the service and the seizure of the firearms or deadly weapons? So that's it in a nutshell. This week we have a meeting where the chief, the sheriff, and the chiefs from Lynn County and Sweet Home will be available, as will the district attorney. So I know we're going to approach this topic with the district attorney to see what's their feedback and the advice they can give us at this point in time.
Okay. All right. Questions?
Yes. How's it legal if my brother says he needs to give me, he can't give me his weapons? That's illegal. It has to go through an FFL. Can't transfer.
Well, I'm just telling you as the Senate bill reads, you can turn them over to somebody who's lawfully able to possess the weapon, but it does not reference what you're saying, which is a good point. The transfer of the firearm.
And second, when does the person have a right to meet his accuser? You know, where, at what point? If it's, I don't see where there's due process going on.
Yeah, and again, just from my reading of the Senate bill, it looks like it's following the same track as a restraining order violation. If somebody feels that they have grounds for a restraining order, they first approach the court with their petition and their packet. The judge makes an initial ruling, the respondent is served. Then the respondent has the ability to go in and request the hearing to contest the validity
of
the charges.
But has to give up their weapons prior to the private hearing.
Yes, that's
so
correct.
So where are their rights being served?
At the hearing that they contest.
Well, but they had their stuff taken without due process. Because they haven't been brought in yet. We're not going to solve this here.
Yeah. Right.
That's what we're, Dr. Cork handles that, and that's over at the court and how they're going to proceed with it. So it's just like restraining orders, the same thing. Someone can go follow a restraining order. You haven't had to do a process yet. You get served, and yet, say you're at the house, now you're out on the street. Now you got to wait until you go and contest it before maybe you get back in. And then sometimes it gets turned around, and the person who filed the case, you're the only one's out. It just depends on the process, but it's the same type of thing.
I was went online and read a little bit more about it. Isn't there signed petitions to over appeal it, not appeal it, rescinded?
I don't know. Until they
didn't make it.
Through the, yeah, I don't think it made
it.
So if I recall, this came to council and Tom Courtier had a concern.
Yes.
And it sounds to me like in most cases, until you get further clarification, it's going to be a county issue.
In many circumstances, yeah. In my discussions with the undersheriff, the one sticking point would be if one of our officers was the one to file the petition, would we, as the Albany Police Department, right, be required to go through the process of
serving? And you're waiting for clarification on that.
Because even the question we have is, say, we do serve it, but it doesn't give me the right to go into their house and search their weapon without a search warrant. So now you have to turn around and call for a search warrant. We don't know that yet. So we're
there's a lot of unanswered questions, and also the part that nobody that I've spoken with likes is you have to serve the person and say, I'll be back in 24 hours. So if you're dealing with somebody who's
on suicide,
right.
Yeah. So now we have to give them advance notice that we'll be back in 24 hours.
So they won't kill themselves.
Or somebody else, or hide the weapons, or any number of things. So, yeah, we're trying to make sense of how this is going to play out. So, yeah, we're still waiting for guidance and how that's going to play out.
All right. Well, thank you for the update. Thank you. And we will see you Friday.
Yep.
Afternoon.
And our move-in date right now is December 4th. So Friday is going to be more of a dedication. But it'll give a chance to everybody to see the entire facility. Because if we're already moved in, then like property evidence, some of the places will be locked down. People wouldn't be allowed to go in there. Well, now they'll be allowed to walk through the whole entire building.
Okay.
And that's 4 o'clock Friday.
4 o'clock. Yeah.
So does the contractor get that even ready for Friday?
Yes.
They still start, because it seems like they've been about working 24/7.
Well, they worked all weekend too, trying to get all the painting stuff done. So.
I saw 8 painting rigs there Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Did
so they're
four masks. They're trying to get them.
Oh my God!
They got most of the top floor done, but they're working hard on the bottom floor. So they've got a lot of work to do.
Wow! Oh my gosh! Just look at just wonderful. So, yeah. Great. All right. Thank you. Okay, let's see, Jorge, are you taking the lead on this one for the intergovernmental agreement with Lynn County for the expo?
Yes.
Okay.
So I shared with a few documents there. The TLT committee met on September 20th, and again, I think it was October 18th, where the administrator, Randy Porter, provided a list of capital projects, and the TLT committee reviewed those and narrowed down to 2 projects that they were interested in gathering more information from the administrator from the agency. The TLT committee generated a series of questions, I think it was at 7-7 year for each of the projects, and Randy provided that information back to the committee for their review. At this point, what ended up being the project that the TLT committee is actually requesting the council to review and approve is for the horse stalls. Randy provided some information here. Randy also informed the committee that the Expo Center has lost horse shows to other locations that have newer or improved horse stalls. Lynn County staff is concerned that if stalls are not replaced, they will continue to lose shows to other venues. The plan is to purchase new stalls based on the metal frame that cannot be kept through or won't rot. So we have an IDA, which actually some of the concerns that the council provided us was that we wanted to make sure that there's kind of a check and balance in terms of there's a receipt that we can actually get from them, that they're investing these dollars in the right project for the town. So we added a line item on the IGA that accounts for that as well. So at this point, the action is to review the IGA and approve the city manager to sign the IGA, and we'll share it with the Lynn County's commissioners. We're also going to be putting up $100,000 so it's a match at this point. And one of the other things that the committee was interested in sharing with the council is that this is going to be an ongoing process for the next 3 years, where we'll bring an updated IGA with projects for the council to review, and then the council can decide if this is something they want to fund and move forward. And since we have a TLT committee chair here, if Scott wants to provide any information that I've missed in terms of that committee, is there anything I missed there, Scott?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of discussion. First of all, did the projects that the Expo Center brought as far as their priority list, were they truly assets, asset replacement or asset replacers? So did it fit the criteria? And then second of all, we went through the list, as Laurie said, and we said yay or nay to be able to narrow it down to the highest priority. And the highest priority was based on yield of revenue to the city, well, in commerce to the city and to the hoteliers with long stay events. And so out of all the project, it showed the greatest merit for immediate impact and immediate fruitful effort. So since that project was $300,000, we stopped there and didn't evaluate the rest of the projects any further than the questions that they had asked and that Brandy had brought back to us. So they had lost 7 projects over the past 5 years, and they thought that they could get back 6 of them very quickly if they had new improved stalls. So.
Yeah,
it was a good discussion. It took us 2 full sessions, almost 4 hours, to go through all the projects and ask the right questions.
Yes, in addition to the questions that we gave Randy, I went ahead and sent out to the hoteliers which ones they would support. And only one hotelier sent back, I think it was the Orient Express. They actually were in support of the horse stalls. The others did not respond, even though I sent a second email, they didn't respond which one they prefer for us to fund.
The only question I have is, looking on page 9 of our packet, it's the exhibit page, the horse stall project. It says the budget is $300,000.
Yes.
We're contributing $100,000, and it says the county is required to contribute $100,000. Where does the other $100,000 come from?
To pay for the stalls. Yeah, Randy is looking into private donations. There's a couple companies. There's one particular company that he's looking into getting the remaining dollars to refund his budget.
Okay, so are we going to be? Is the city going to be just submitting $100,000 as a bank transfer, cash, whatever, check, whatever? Or are we waiting until receipts come in?
According to the IGA, we're waiting for receipts.
Okay. That's easily enough done.
And they also said that it wasn't an all and done project, that they'd be able to phase it in. So if there wasn't a sponsorship came available, they'd be able to do a significant majority of the project for the first $200,000 and evaluate after that. But it would make a huge impact, that first $200,000.
So we need a motion.
Did they say anything about how many heads to beds it would generate? Because what I always heard when it came to the horse shows, that a lot of them have their big RV horse hauling RVs that they use.
When we spoke with Leah back several meetings ago, and she represented the hoteliers at the time, she said that the horse revenue was probably the number one item that they had lost significant income from. Out of all of the events held at the Expo Center, the horse shows was the one that they saw the immediate impact. followed closely by the dog shows. So the hoteliers felt that there was a big impact with the horse shows as a multi-day event.
So that sort of shifted compared to, they used to say several years before that it didn't, so they must have changed their mind.
The participants are the ones who many times have their own rigs, but the people who come and see it are the ones, they come from all over, so they use various facilities.
A lot of rooms, and I don't have the information in front of me, but they had provided some estimates and some breakouts of the number of rooms booked by event type, and we had double-checked that back when we were doing the meeting, and I just don't remember what the top of my head was, but it was significant.
And I feel like we have the plan to buy most of them at Coastal Farms, which is locally, so that'll be...
Coastal Farms, we're talking about
It's not a done deal yet, but I would move approval of the IGA.
Okay, is this, do you want to do approval of this, or do you want to take it to a council meeting for action?
How about we take it to council? Should have full council.
Okay.
Yeah, or it's not this week, it's the next
and
week.
And I remove my approval.
Yeah, we can have it the next week.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jorge. All right. The intergovernmental agreement with Lebanon for emergency biosolids hauling. Kristen.
So the city of Lebanon is in search of temporary disposal options for their biosolids at their wastewater treatment plant. For the past couple of winters, they've been in an emergency hauling situation, which is very expensive and I'm sure pretty stressful. What they produce is a liquid biosolids that they can apply in the summertime, but in the wintertime they cannot, and they've exceeded their capacity at the plant in the wintertime for holding solids. And also because it's liquid, the landfill does not accept it. So they're looking for a long-term solution, but in the meantime, the WRF staff have proposed that we can help them out. And this is, you know, typical in the wastewater profession. It's a pretty tight-knit group. When we can help each other out, that's generally what we try to do, especially in neighboring communities. Because we do have a dewatering system that the city of Lebanon does not have. And we could add their liquid biosolids to our liquid solids and then dewater them and then send them to the landfill. The amount that we anticipate from Lebanon is just a fraction of what we produce, and we do have the capacity. Lebanon produces a Class A biosolids, which is fully treated and stabilized, whereas we don't. We don't fully treat our solids. We have unstabilized sludge, so we don't anticipate that their solids would create additional odor as compared to ours or any process problems. They actually produce a higher quality solids than we do. So we feel like it's something we can readily accommodate. And so we have this proposed IGA, and we've estimated the cost to about $520 per dry ton to manage solids. And that includes all hauling fees, and all the landfill fees, dumpster liners, the polymer that we use for dewatering, electricity, and also a loaded labor rate for handling solids. But we're proposing to charge Lebanon $600 per dry ton, which allows for about $80 a ton for wear and tear on our equipment and other costs that you can't fully itemize or it's difficult to itemize. We feel that this fee more than compensates us for our costs. In the proposed IGA, we also have a maximum amount that we'll accept over the winter and also weekly, so that doesn't disrupt our operations, and so we can steadily maintain our normal pressing and hauling activities. The proposed IGA also gives us the option to refuse acceptance of their solids based on odor or equipment breakdown, or if we're experiencing a lot of solids at the plant ourselves, or if the landfill doesn't accept it. As far as budget impacts, if you assume 300,000 liquid gallons, we'd expend about 17,500 approximately, but we bill Lebanon 22,500. So that's, for that example, that would be a revenue of about $5,000. So it's not a money-making venture. It is, and it's a little bit, it's not break-even. We wouldn't lose money, and we wouldn't subsidize Lebanon's biosolids program. So this proposed IGA is still at the staff level. We haven't had our attorney look at it, or Lebanon has not yet either. So we're just bringing this to you to consider, but we're going to be recommending that we enter an IGA with Lebanon for accepting their solids.
Question.
Do they know these numbers?
Yes.
Now, we're cooperating with them. Are they cooperating with us?
On this issue?
No, on all issues.
I can't speak to all issues.
Well, the other issue coming up. How many weeks have we lost out on $4,000 a week of power? Because they are.
Yeah, so to answer your question, yes, they are cooperating with us. They're not reimbursing us for the lost hydropower revenue, but then we haven't asked them to either. So if you'd like us to ask them to do that, we can, but we haven't done that.
The question is, I mean, being a good neighbor is a good thing. Being a good neighbor that is paying someone else is maybe not so good. How long have we not gotten that revenue, and how long are we not going to be receiving revenue? I mean, now's the time when we can be making money with it, of, you know, the 3.5 weeks per year that, you know, everything, all the stars are in alignment so we can make money. I don't know if broaching that subject is a big deal, but if nothing else, pointing out to them that we're losing $4,000 a week while they're doing their project, at some point, you know, it's not a ton of money, but it is the idea.
And they know that. We've told them that we haven't been able to operate hydro, and we're losing revenue because of their project. And I don't know if they've told their council that, but their staff in the Public Works Department knows that.
Do we have a projected time?
The latest projection is the end of this month they'll be done, but you know, it's just depending on how their new boring system works. So that's the latest projection.
And it's what, 50 feet or something
so
like
maybe
that.
If they're told, reminded that we're losing $4,000 a week, that they will get it done by the end of the month. So hopefully, where there might be a conversation coming up for
they're going as reversing. I mean, I feel badly for them, but they're going, they need this done as well, because they have to get all sorts of permitting exemptions to keep working this late. So they're trying to get it accomplished.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to tell them that how much we've lost so far. If you'd like
we have some concerns.
Well, how many $1,000 worth of loss?
Yeah.
I mean, how many weeks has it been going on now? And we're not now talking about having another 3 weeks anyway. That's $12,000.
We'll have another chance to talk about neighborly relations with them coming up.
Right. Well, Peter and I have an appointment with their city manager next week.
To walk along the edge of the canal.
We'll have a chance to talk.
Be careful. Make sure you're wearing your boots. I understand it can get a little muddy.
So Bessie had a question at Bill.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, so are we going over to Lebanon and getting it, or are they hauling it here?
They would haul it to us. Mm-hmm. And they would take all responsibility for getting it to us where we want it, and they would take all the samples necessary.
So that will actually save moving on our travel and our
No, it's just they would deal with theirs and bring it to us, and
but
then we would take it.
We don't have to go over. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Sure.
So we don't have to.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So this was typed up and distributed to all of us prior to our meeting Thursday night, our joint meeting with Millersburg. And, you know, there were some issues that came up at that meeting. I don't remember specifically if there were issues the city of Millersburg had, but I know one of the issues I had was with the cost. And my concern about how are we going to accurately track what we think the costs are. And I can see you just bumped it 15%, just kind of a...
Wag.
Yeah.
Maybe just wag.
Since that meeting, we've only had today to kind of think about it. Are you still comfortable?
We did think about it, and we are still comfortable with, you know, we rounded everything up, basically. And, you present the example of wear and tear on the asphalt. I mean, I don't know how you quantify that. But it seems like the bump up of the, $80 per ton could account for that wear and tear.
The next issue is the quarterly billing.
Mm-hmm.
Could we do it monthly?
We could. I put quarterly in there because we already prepared the quarterly bill. So it would just go in as another line.
But, and here's my thought process. If this were a private citizen or possibly even a business, something other than a government entity, you'd say, your credit rating is terrible. I wouldn't loan you a cup of coffee based on the history with the canal. I mean, Sean was involved, just refused to pay, and it was a battle to get paid. If there's some convenience to the city to do it quarterly, but from a private business standpoint, I'd bill them every month. And I'd want to see payment and have the ability to say, you know what, you're late in your payment, you better have a check on the next truck that comes over, or just don't send the truck.
We could do it that way if you'd like. I will say that since we signed the new IGAs for the canal, there were two new IGAs that the staff ended up developing finally for the canal. They have paid, they're fully up to date on their payments, they haven't been late. But if it would, we can bill them at whatever frequency we want. I think our accounts receivable people run invoices weekly, so we can do it on the load if we wanted to. But it, whichever way. In the recent past, I am well aware of what you're bringing up, and I went through all of that anger and frustration as well. But in the recent past, they've been better.
Well, and to kind of piggyback on what Rich has said, I don't think they've been a good neighbor. I mean, I hadn't even thought about the lost revenue from the lack of the ability to generate. And I honestly don't think they care. Now, you may say, oh, they're in a hurry and it's costing them and so forth. They're not going to pay for it. I would expect them to pay for the lost revenue, and that's beyond their how they operate or think, in my opinion. I think they've just, like I said, not been a good neighbor. And as I mentioned in the meeting Thursday night, quite honestly, I'm not interested in talking to them. Now, you've got to get along with them. You've got some intergovernmental agreements. You're carrying on a professional relationship with them. I get that. But, I feel.
We will do whatever you want us to do. And this was actually our idea. This was not Lebanon's idea. They're trying to find solutions, and this is one of, I think, the things they're looking at. I don't know what else is on their list, but I...
Oh, our idea?
This was our idea.
Contingent upon. If we are helping them out, great, fine. They can help us out. Oh, sure.
I'm comfortable with whatever staff decides. I'm not here to dictate what staff does. I voice my concerns. And again, you're the ones that have to carry on this professional relationship, not me. Now, you can always use good cop, bad cop. I mean, we do that all the time. But, geez, I mean, I tell you what, I got a counselor who's pretty hot. This is a good deal. You better just sign it and be quiet.
Well, and they must be having some challenging times over there, because even with the Lebanon Fire District, I think I saw two calls to Lebanon on Saturday, one on Sunday, and two this weekend to Sweet Home. And that's our Medic 13. So we're getting pulled. It puts a big, huge demand on our staff, having to, you know, be serving the whole county. But I think they've got some challenging times. But I'm needing to quite understand on the expenditure side of this. So Lebanon's going to be hauling their biosolids to our plant.
Right.
And then this solids process improvements is for processing their biosolids.
Right.
And then who pays to haul it to, if we have to haul it to the landfill, Coffin Butte?
So that's inclusive of the landfill cost. So that $17,350 plus the power, that's what it costs, will cost to manage their solids at our plant and dispose of it.
But aren't we paying $500,000 a year almost for all that?
Yeah.
So this is just a drop in the bucket.
And this is hardly anything.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a very small quantity in the grand scheme of things.
It's like 5% of what we produce.
Okay. So is this going to be down? It'll be down by tonnage then. So we'll be monitoring. If they exceed their tonnage, they're going to be paying more.
Right.
And to answer your question, we would pay it, but we will recoup the costs and then a little bit extra.
Right. Yeah. So that's that $22,500.
Right, and they did cap the tonnage that they're allowed to bring.
Right, weekly and in total, because you know the only thing that would upset the process at our plant is if we got a huge load for them, we'd have to be really significant. So we want it to be measured and controlled.
Mm-hmm. And this is going to be, is this a short term?
Yes.
So
this is just one year, just over this winter.
Just 1 year then.
And it's over just the winter.
Yeah.
Winter and spring.
Yeah, until
because
they can start.
If it's going to be a long term, then they need to also be paying in for capital improvements in the future for this type of process.
I don't know. It's just intended to get them through this winter. And, you know, they are working on, they've got their own capital process they've got to work on to get their plant fixed.
Okay.
We're not fixing that.
Well, I guess from my perspective, if you're building a relationship with them and this is going to be an attaboy we get, okay. Cognizant of the fact that the history is what the history is, and I will refrain from saying anything that I said before. I mean, things can blow up in the bad way. But they need reminded that we're going the extra mile, and at the same time being reminded of $4,000 a week that we're losing, being the good guy that we are, that we could use that money too.
Sure.
I have a special project for that. I don't know what it is yet.
I have no problem with going on with the staff as recommended.
Right, and we want to be neighborly, you know, too. So
yes.
It's just, you know, we want to help out our neighbors, but we want to just make sure it's not at the expense of all the taxpayers. Okay, so do you want this to come, do you want action on this or bring it to the next council meeting for action?
We have to bring it to the December 6th.
December
it still
6th.
Has to be reviewed and we still have to work out fine details.
We add 20% to it.
All right, so we'll be seeing this item come back. Okay. Oh, right.
Profit.
Thank you.
Profit.
Okay, next is the AMIDEC report. So, John, are you
Mayor, Council, thanks for having us here. Just found out my name's on this on this agenda. Our report is to give you some background and an update on the multimodal facility for the Mid-Willamette Valley, which is hopefully going to be funded by House Bill 2017. And we have Greg Smith, who is our project manager, who's going to talk to you about the project, give you an update, and just answer all your questions about it. Greg?
Is that all right, Mayor?
Yeah,
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council, city manager. For the record, I'm Greg Smith.
have been hired by Amadek to bring forward a potential reload slash transload facility at the property formerly known as the IP site. First of all, let me share with you, you folks have a phenomenal state representative and a phenomenal state senator who helped pass House Bill 2017, in which $25 million of lottery-backed bonds were dedicated to the Mid-Willamette Valley for the specific purpose of developing a reload facility. And so Amadek has been working aggressively to put this project together. I've had an opportunity to visit with many of you, including you, Mayor, to talk about this project. And what we're hoping to do, one, is give you a little bit of an update of where we are today, and then two, is to ask for your support as we get ready to submit our application to the Department of Transportation. So as I shared with you, the legislature allocated $25 million. They created a set of rules, and within those set of rules, 5% of the $25 million has been set aside for a pre-proposal application in which a community can apply, ask for those dollars, and begin putting together a business plan and doing due diligence on engineering, design, et cetera. And so that's where we are in the process right now, is putting that pre-proposal together. It's due by December 15th. I would share with you, I believe an application will also be coming from Lebanon, which is ironic considering the conversation we just had. And then I believe there's also going to be an application coming from the Springfield, Eugene area as well. Statutorily, and this is the real important part for everyone to understand, statutorily, the money's coming. The money is coming. It's in the House bill. $26 million will be going to Treasure Valley over in the Ontario Malheur area. $7 million-ish will be going to the Port of Morrow in Boardman. Couple million will be going to the coast, and $25 million will be coming here. So we've been working diligently on an application. There's four parts to the application. The first is a project description, and we'll talk about that in a moment. The second is to put together a budget. The third part of it is to create a timeline. And then the fourth part is probably the most important, and that's showing community support and showing support within the region. And that's why I'm here today. So in the project description, what I would share with you is, first of all, how many have been to the IP site? Is everybody? Everyone can visualize it.
Let me it took me just a split second when you said IP site because everybody in here knows it's paper mill.
Yeah, okay. The paper mill. I'm the guy from out of town. I'm trying to nail this. What I would share with you is, and let me digress a little bit because this will help you understand what you really have. I come from Eastern Oregon. I do economic development privately. I have offices in Heppner, Boardman, Hermiston, LaGrande, Baker City, Ontario, Vail, Bend, and recently an office in Seaside. And hopefully we'll soon have an office here in your community as we work with you. And what I want to share with you is I spent a lot of time developing my career at the Port of Morrow, which is the second largest port in the state. And the Port of Morrow is in an interesting location. It is right where, geographically, where I-84, I-82, the UP main line, and the Columbia River all come together. And so it's right there for intermodal activity. Well, you folks are sitting on a similar piece of real estate. You're right where Interstate 5, the UP main line, and then the Portland Western or BNSF line come together. And they're right there in that location. The land is owned industrial for outright use, and it's ready to develop. And so I think you're sitting in a very, very strategic location. So we're trying to put that project together, we're trying to be on budget, and we're trying to figure out how to gain support. A few things. One, the Portland Western Railroad is gonna write us a strong letter of support. Union Pacific is writing us a letter of collaboration that says, we're not sure what the market demand is going to be yet, but we stand ready to work with you. Our local trucking company has stepped up, and they're writing a letter of support. And then on top of that, and this is going to sound quirky, Tidewater Barge Lines is going to be writing a letter of support. And we'll be able to show the collaboration with multi-modes, three modes of transportation commerce. In addition, the Seed Council is going to be working with us on a letter of support, and also other folks in the ag community. So that's where we are. We're trying to work through who's going to operate this facility. Right now, there's two prominent entities. One is a gentleman by the name of Gary Cardwell at Northwest Container. He's on board. Actually, as a matter of fact, he sent me a letter or an email last week asking if he's if we're ready to enter into a sole agreement of operation between your company and us. Hold on a minute here. And then also, and hang with me on this, because I know there's a little bit of rub a few years back, but Teven Brothers out of Rainier, they have a phenomenal reload facility at Rainier with the Portland Western Railroad going right into their facility. They're interested in working with us, but who knows, maybe one of our local companies will step up and they'll be the operator.
That's with the county.
With
the problems with the county.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the good news, it's all worked itself through, and on Friday, a group from AMADEC and the county are going to be going to Rainier and sitting down and have a conversation. So the good part is we have options. So we're looking for your support. Our application has to be submitted by December 15th. I can assure you, your community is going to have an A-plus application submitted. It will be done very well. We're going to try and do it in a way that shows that you can have industrial development and be a good neighbor. We're going to try and show that you can have commerce and activity without impacting traffic in a negative way. And I think if we do this project correctly, we can do that. So that's a little bit about what's going on. In terms of support, I would share with you the county has stepped up and has really kind of put itself out on a limb a little bit, but in a positive way, to secure the real estate. And so that transaction is being completed. I shared with you that Andy Olson and Sarah Gessler are supporting, along with Lee Beyer out of Eugene, which is kind of quirky if you think about it, because Senator Beyer is supporting our project. They have a project in their community. But we're not going to argue, we're going to take it. Senator Betsy Johnson is on board supporting. Representative Cliff Dentz, the actual author of House Bill 2017, is on board. So I feel very, very confident the project is going to move forward. But you know what? We want to do it correctly. And we want to do it in a way to where you have something to be proud of for years to come. So I'm not the music man here. Okay? I want to share with you, this is your project. My job is to design it the way you want to. Madam Mayor, you and I visited. There's some real issues that I think are very legitimate we're going to work through and visit with the rest of you, and I can tell you we're going to work with all of you to do it right. So, but in the end, it's your project.
So has Millersburg City Council taken formal action yet? Because that's what I thought before our council did. We want them first, or other words, it looks like we're the big brother. You know?
So I think tomorrow night they're having a council meeting to include some of their industrial land in our package and to...
Okay, so we can do it at our next council meeting then with board, and that'd be out to them. Yeah.
It just makes lots of sense. I mean, they used to call Albany Hub City for a reason. I mean, we have a road to Salem and a road to Independence and a road to, you know, Camp Adair and to Corvallis and, you know, Eugene and Brownsville, and I mean, we're in the center of it.
Madam Mayor, Councilor, you really are. I'm the guy from Heppner. You know, when I came to Albany, it was usually because I was going to a football game or dropping my kid off at school. But when I had a chance to sit down and really look on a map at where you're strategically located, you are at the center of
a bunch of stuff.
That is correct. And I really think you have something to build on if we do it correctly. And that's where I had shared my sentiments, that it needs to be done correctly, because the one thing I think all of us get the most complaints is our railroad crossings. So if they're going to be adding a lot more trains and routes going through, since we have the O&E line and the Toledo line and the UP line and the A&E all going through Albany to get out to this reload facility, we don't want it to be impacting our crossings, because then if it's going to be crossing improvements, it needs to be this project paying for it and not on Albany's dime to pay for those improvements. And also I share the sentiment, if there's not enough funds to get the project going, don't come to Albany for money, you go to Lynn County for money. So, but you don't come to Albany to backfill the budget. So
I can share this with you. One, I have extensive experience in doing industrial development. What we're going to do is back into the project and say we have $25 million. We know we're going to set aside approximately $9 million for the payment of the real estate. With that said, now what can we afford to build? And we'll back into that. We're not going to overbuild this project, and we may end up having to take it in stages as cash flow allows.
You mentioned that at the Chamber of Commerce Government Affairs meeting on how Port Morrow built over time. It just wasn't one all at one fell swoop, and that has served the Port Morrow very, very well. So same thing could happen here. Obviously, Millersburg would be the most direct beneficial community of this, but Albany is going to benefit dramatically just simply because of the, I think.
Well, not only that, you're going to have a whole bunch of pressure that you can apply to a railroad, and railroads don't take pressure worth a darn. But the issue that we have that keeps happening at Queen, all of a sudden there's going to be a whole lot more cooperation, and we might may well be able to have a better outcome for Queen because this happens. I mean, it's,
well, when it comes to the railroad, you know, well, I'm not too optimistic.
You're talking about millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of business for them. Even when they tell you, oh gee, we're just up to our ears in business, we don't know what we're going to do. You show anybody millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, and pretty soon they start paying attention.
Well,
even the biggies.
We just need to make sure that we protect Albany, though, out of this, so we're not financially hit most of the times at the crossings.
Well, and they're not asking for any money. They're asking for us to say, we think it's a good idea. And I don't think, I don't know. I think it's three letters, D-U-H. Duh! I mean, it's a good idea.
It's a great idea, but we just don't want it to be coming back at Albany to have to be doing some rail improvements or any sort of transportation impact improvements. So there's a lot of unknowns, and I think it's, you know, for us to make sure that we're protecting our city, we need to make sure that sentiment is out there, that we want to make sure that we protect our community. But, and it's just like when it came to Connect Oregon 4 funds that had moved the UP, switching yard out to Millersburg, but UP turned right around and re-leased out the yard here at Queen. So that's beyond our control. We had no control over that. So when it comes to the railroad, as I've told people, they're like their own separate government. They'll do what they want.
They have their own set of rules.
Yeah.
No question about
that. Yeah.
So let me just conclude with this thought, Mayor. I'll be around, so if anyone would like additional information, don't hesitate to get a hold of me. Two, I share with you, Mayor, I'm more than willing to meet with you on a regular basis to get your ideas, you know, learn about the issues and try to resolve any outstanding issues. And then third, I would share this with you. The legislature is using its resources to build this project, which means you are going to have zero debt on this facility. You're going to have a $25 million income-producing asset to where you can take those dollars and put them into other economic development purposes, and maybe it is working to make other rail improvements, or maybe it's to put them into micro-businesses, or maybe it's to develop an incubator for light manufacturing. You're going to have a lot of opportunities with this. The Port of Morrow, and again, I want to come back there because I really think there's a similarity. The Port of Morrow started with $50,000, turned it into a revolving loan fund of over $11 million, has started fiber companies, and owns probably close to $100 million worth of buildings, all in partnership with the Port of Morrow. I think you can do something similar. Thank you for letting me be here. I really hope you folks will support this. We want to get a stronger letter in.
We're going to support that.
Did you have a question?
I had a few questions. What's the Project Lebanon looking at?
You know, here's what's interesting. They're not asking specifically about ours, and I'm not asking specifically about theirs, because there is a little bit of competition for this money. Statutorily, it must be for a transload / reload facility on industrially zoned land. So we know their project will be that. My understanding is it's on real estate that's adjacent to the Veterans Home there in Lebanon. But in terms of their specifics,
I have purposely not asked.
And same with Eugene Springfield?
Correct. I know the Eugene Springfield project is in concept, and we'll probably have a difficult time even submitting on time.
So this was kind of touched on, but you, in your opening remarks, you mentioned how it's where I-5 and the two railroads come together. And then I think as Rich mentioned, you know, Highway 20, Highway 34, and then to a certain extent, Highway 22. I realize that's 20 miles to the north, but those are major east-west roads,
yes, sir.
You know. How would it get built? In other words, would it be designed and go out to bid, or would there be design-build contest, or?
Excellent question. So what will end up happening is of the $25 million, 5% will be set aside for site design, building design, et cetera. I've already established relationships with two of our local engineering firms here, both of whom have different specialties. But what we're going to end up doing is with the AMIDEC Executive Committee and with local expertise, we're going to sit down in a room like this, and we're going to put tables around, and we're going to start laying out what do we want the design and layout to look like. For example, Teven Brothers, because they're going to utilize Portland Western Railroad, they will probably have a different need than, say, Gary Cardwell, who's doing direct transload up to Tacoma. And so what we're going to do is collectively work together, and I'd share with you, you're invited to come and sit down and have input.
Yeah. Didn't you indicate at the chamber presentation about the railroad getting involved on that design also?
Yeah.
Because they wanted it, and they could even make it more efficient.
Yeah, thank you for adding that. So what we will end up doing is we will bring in the railroads, and they will sit down with us and design that layout based upon what the real estate and the market demand is. But collectively, we'll all be working together. But yes, yep. And I've actually had multiple meetings with both the Union Pacific and Portland Western, and they both have expressed their desire to do that. Yeah, so thank you for
passing that, Rich.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, so $9 million set aside for the land, $5 million for the design.
5%. No,
5%. 5%, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
She has to go with it.
Yeah, because that
right.
wasn't adding up to stuff.
One point.
But
yeah.
that's
five.
Still
yeah.
$10 million, so $15 million is enough to build.
I would share with you, there is a beautiful building on property right now. Now, to some folks, they'll go out there and go, that's an eyesore. Don and I go out there and it's beautiful. I mean, it's structurally ready to
yeah,
go.
Yes.
And probably with about $1 million, you could clean that up and you've got 60,000 square feet of reload facility.
Oh,
it's probably,
okay. So
probably a $5 to $9 million
yes.
value building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
It is concrete, heavy,
oh, yeah.
heavy concrete
heavy
floor,
concrete,
steel,
yeah.
steel trusses.
And part of what we want, if I can finish, part of what we want to do is recognize that this $25 million is a first-time investment. Again, I'm not trying to share too much of the Port of Morrow, but if you do your homework on that, I think you'll see about $68 million of lottery-backed activity has come to the Port of Morrow. And what I'm trying to do is create that framework here so Andy and Sarah can continue to get investments into your community.
That makes sense. Thank you.
And so we have to do it correct.
Yes.
The facility and the trackage switches, all that's going to be owned by AMIDEC.
Right.
Not no,
correct.
So it's not, no railroad's going to be able to come and say, oh, no, we're going to switch, turn the key off.
No. And what we'll do, counselors will enter into a triple net lease agreement with an operator, which means they'll be responsible for paying AMIDEC a source of income. They'll be responsible for insurance, they'll be responsible for taxes, and they'll be responsible for depreciation or maintenance of rail lines, buildings, etc. So it should be a quadruple lease value. But they'll be responsible for all of that work.
So as part of the study, though, kind of a feasibility sort of study market on it, is it going to be looking at the railroad crossings of what, how much capacity there is in our crossings? What kind of
Oh, most
impacts?
Definitely. Most definitely. That's just part of
through all of
yeah.
our
Oh, yeah.
Process.
Yeah,
okay.
Most definitely.
Mm-hmm. And then how long is that process going to take?
Well, so what we will have is we'll submit our application on December 15th. I would anticipate probably a 90-day-ish
process for them to review these pre-submittals. From there, they'll award that money. Then I would anticipate probably 12 to 14 months right in there. Could be a lot less, but I don't want to be overly optimistic and then miss my deadline.
Yeah.
And so during that time, we'll be working with Union Pacific. We'll be working with probably some form of rail economist, transload economist, to help us understand what the true demand is, and then finalize site design and business plan. Again, the beauty of this is there's no debt. That's the beauty of this project. We have a lot of latitude. We don't have, the clock's not ticking on us, but the bank's saying, where's our payment? And so we have the ability to do it correctly.
Portland and Western, Albany and Eastern?
What's that?
Albany and Eastern?
No. And I'd love to have a side conversation, why not?
Okay.
With you.
Well, 11.
Well, it's possible if they offload some freight over there, they could bring it up to this facility. But they don't have a container facility, and Northwest Container said that site's too far off I-5 for
right.
much container traffic.
If you go listen to Senator Fred Girard, he had some personal issues with that railroad, and so I'll be with you.
Well, yeah. ODOT has personal issues with that
railroad. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And a whole bunch of people between Lebanon and Sweet Home have a personal issue.
As a matter of fact, and I'm guessing on this, so whoever's taking minutes on this, I may be incorrect, but I think you read House Bill 2017, it specifically mentions that no money will go to that railroad.
Yeah.
I mean, which is pretty quirky for legislation to say that, but I think Senator Girard had that put in there. I know, nothing else, I know it's on the record.
Yeah, wow. My big concern, I just don't want the stacking and have to be impacting.
Right.
And mostly when it comes to the Toledo line with North Albany having two crossings, that's it. You don't
right.
need the train to just stop there to try to all head into the facility. But,
and so what,
yeah.
Mayor, what I'm more than willing to do is sit down and try to work through those issues to make sure it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And the cool part is because we'll control the facility, we have the ability to control that issue.
Yeah.
Great.
So.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right. So, okay. And we'll wait to see how the wording is for Millersburg when they support it with the letter. Great. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. This is from the council.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nothing.
Okay, Scott.
Nothing this evening, thank you.
All right, thank you. And I think Mike comes back Wednesday. Yeah, okay. Well, thank you again for your service.
Thank you.
Hey, Ray.
I did take down and gave it to Marilyn, and it'll be up on our channel, TV channel, a full video of the parade that we were in. I had the cell camera on the front window of the trolley.
Did you view it? How did it come out?
Came out just fine.
Oh, good.
Came out just fine. So,
I couldn't believe how much it rained.
We got lucky. It didn't start raining, but basically after we got done, then it started to come down pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'll apologize, because I left at that point and went home, I missed the flyover.
No, it went over us when we were on the trolley.
Yeah.
Really?
It's just a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Nobody mentioned anything. I didn't hear anything. Nobody said a word.
We had our heads out the trolley looking up at it.
Saw one, and Sharon says, look, her Bessie turned and says, yeah, I can see it. And then she says,
here comes the other one.
And I saw it off the right side.
We had our heads out the trolley, so where were you, Ray?
I don't know. At what point was this out on the bridge?
Just about by Carnegie Library.
Yeah.
Just
well, I can go back and look at the video. I should be able to see heads sticking out the window. And I sure didn't. Okay, never mind.
Oh,
I definitely said I missed it.
Carnegie
Library area. Okay.
Who was it that said, no, there's the second one? I thought that was you.
I did too.
Sharon said
I think
that.
I did.
Oh.
And then I think we said, was there a third? And then
yeah,
somebody said, no, it was the thrusters or whatever.
About that time we turned the corner.
Yeah,
that's funny.
But yeah, because the one we had last year, I mean, it was right there down by the fire department, and it was just wham.
And then, as we go over the top.
Carnegie Library, right on Ferry, kind of like that area.
Okay, I'm done.
No.
Do you know how the carousel did on Saturday?
I haven't heard yet.
Haven't heard, yeah.
Looking forward to hearing that information.
Yeah, yeah, so I hope they had a good turnout, so probably did, but, okay. Bill? Okay, and I don't know where Dick, I bet you the email.
We just checked on him, he's okay.
Okay, because the email didn't get out on Friday, and I forgot to remind him when I saw him at the noon meeting, so he probably didn't even know.
He did know about it, but he didn't double check the schedule. He was aware of the noon meeting, and he thought that was it for the day.
Okay.
So who brought the book for him?
I did, it's his book.
Oh, it's his, okay.
I'll take it back and I'll give it to him Wednesday.
Okay, did you have anything, Bill?
No.
No, okay, and I don't think I had anything, so Peter?
I was just gonna say that Chris is gonna give you a tour of the hybrid generating capability we have at the power plant Wednesday.
Both the old and new.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, as I mentioned earlier, we'll be taking a trip along the canal out with Gary Marks in Lebanon. Jorge has had the economic development manager interviews for the last two candidates, and I think he's made some good progress on that, and he will announce that next time we meet. And then we got finance director interviews on Monday, the 26th, coming up. And I'd say happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, true, yeah. So, okay, so we have, we don't have anything tomorrow night, I do, but Wednesday night then would be for Kara on Wednesday.
And we have WCJC that night.
Oh, we do have that on Wednesday, yeah. Old days, but, and so we don't have anything, oh, police department, don't forget, yes, so we're going on that, so Friday.
Let me invite you to lunch on Thursday.
What's that?
Let me invite you to lunch on Thursday.
Oh, and I'll be there on Thursday for the judging.
The mayor's one of our celebrity judges this year, so finale for the United Way campaign for city employees. And it's a soup cook-off with, Rich was one of our judges last year. A soup cook-off that buys six city employees, they're making soup and you vote with your dollars. Soup, salad, and rolls, and we had some dandies last year, so we've got some people spoiling for a rematch and.
I wish I had time, I'd make my squash soup.
The only problem was the people whose soup it was were serving the soup. And if you really want to have a soup contest, you need to have, it needs to be blind.
Oh, you think so? Well, I'll be a judge, so I'll be sampling the soups?
Yes, you will.
Okay.
And it's totally subjective criteria. If you think it's good soup, you say it's good soup.
Well, since my soup is always a fat-free, sugar-free type soups, and I'll be knowing.
You mean taste bad, is what you're saying.
And no meat, yes.
Oh, God.
We did have a good send-off for the ICMA fellows.
Yes, we did, that was nice.
Yeah, oh, yes, I did make, they came and saw me on Friday, so I did get to see them, but yeah, this is sweet. Okay, anything else? Okay, we are adjourned.